When I was in school, I took a couple of semesters of physics. It wasn't required, but the idea of it interested me. I was fascinated by it. I'll have to say I had a tough time with it. I didn't get it. That is to say, even though I would work on some of the problems, they really didn't register with me. I didn't grasp the concept. I think I got C's in the courses. When I was in school, God was the furthest thing from my mind. I think I was finally convinced that there is a God because I was sitting on a pier at a lake one night looking up at the heavens, and I just concluded that all those stars couldn't be there if God wasn't around to build them, you know, to make them. My title today is The Masterpiece of God. My purpose is to consider some of the amazing things that exist in the creation around us. We sang a song about the harvest this morning. We sang a song about God's faithfulness. I hope that what we talk about today, brethren, will help us to catch a glimpse of the masterpiece that God is creating. I'd like to start in Romans 1, please. Now, this is a verse we've read before. I read it years ago, and I remember the first time I read it, the second time I read it, fifth time I read it, I said, okay. Romans 1, verse 20. Since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so they are without excuse. Well, I had seen trees, and they look pretty nice. And, of course, there's animals. That's nice. But I would say that that stuff in the days that I saw them, in the days that I first read that verse, didn't really convince me of much. When Mr. D'Alessandro first came here, he mentioned a video that's available for free. It's titled The God of Wonders. I don't know if any of you watched it. I went home and watched it. It lasts about an hour and a half. But it's an absolutely overwhelming hour and a half. It's not put on by any church. That's what's amazing about it. It wasn't produced by a church. It was produced by a bunch of scientists who themselves began to get more of the finer details of the creation in their heads. And when they began to see the complexity of it all, they were so overwhelmed that they made this video acknowledging very well that it had to be the hand of a great creator God. There is no church affiliation mentioned with this video. If anybody doesn't have a computer, would like to see it, talk to me. Come to my house, we'll watch it. I'd like to see it again. I've seen it twice, maybe three times, two and a half times. Going back to my physics class, there's one thing that I remember for sure from physics. Probably more than one, but this thing is one thing that I remember for sure. Some of the stuff I'm giving you today, a good portion of the stuff I'm giving you, by the way, is from that video. Not word for word. What I mean is the concept, the idea. The one thing that I remember the most about my physics class is that everything wears out. Everything wears out. Now, we were taught at the time that energy doesn't wear out. I don't buy that. I mean, that's what you would be taught, and the science will convince you. Energy doesn't wear out. It just goes from one form to another. If you have electrical energy, it comes out in the light bulb gives off heat, so it's gone, but it's not really because you got heat. But I'll come back to that. Everything goes away. We catch a glimpse of this if you consider a Geiger counter and uranium, for example, or anything that is radioactive. You hear the noise. That noise is that particular element going away. Now, that's a heavy element. There are lighter elements. The lightest ones are the gases. Then you get into the metals and the things like sulfur that are nonmetals. But the real heavy stuff, much of it which has to be kind of recreated because it was so unstable that by the time there were humans, it was already gone. But this stuff is coming apart at a rate that we can see. But the fact is that everything comes apart. Everything has what's called a half-life. All matter. Iron, for example, is coming apart. I was taught that in physics. I was taught that the sun would burn out. I wasn't too worried about it. Because it's something like 30-some billion years away that's supposed to happen, I guess. I don't know how. The guy who was taught the course, his name was Dillinger. He wrote the book. He knew physics. But to me, something that was going to happen 32 billion years from now, really, I didn't figure I'd be there. The term that's used for these elements that we can see coming apart pretty quickly is that they are unstable. But everything goes away. Everything has a half-life. Okay, now I'm going to give you some logic. The fact that we have a universe tells us that we have a creator. Now that's cheap talk, right? But you see, the energy that's in the universe had to have a beginning. And therefore it required a cause. God has no beginning. He needs no cause. And still that may sound like it's not convincing, but consider this. There is something that's very irrational about energy and matter being eternal. It is going away. Something has to be eternal. It all had to come from somewhere. If it's not the earth and the stars and the planets or the comets, then it's got to be an eternal being. Let's look at Hebrews 1, please. Mass and energy wear out. Hebrews 1, and we'll start in verse 10, says simply, you, eternal, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth, and in the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. They will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak. You will fold them up and they will be changed. You are the same and your years will not fail. When we get into these enormous numbers of years that scientists can come up with as far as when things happened and when things were created, the numbers are so mind-boggling. We toss the numbers around, they don't seem mind-boggling. For example, I have read from about 3 or 4 different sources that science believes that the Earth was created 4.5 billion years ago. Okay, that's a nice number. The margin of error is 0.5 billion. I'm sorry, 0.05 of a billion. But translated another way, what that means is 50 million, and the margin of error my mind can't handle. We have a National Geographic magazine at home. I just was reading this article a few days ago. It shows a horrible disruption that science believes took place about 3.8 billion years ago. And I just had to smile. It shows all kinds of asteroids being flung through space and crashing into other planets, crashing into the moon. And I thought, you know, we don't know when it happened, but we know that at one point the Earth was destroyed or marred heavily because it had to be recreated. And I thought, well, you know, when you have some understanding, some of this makes a little more sense. The forces of nature are guided by God's hand. Did you know when lightning strikes the earth, it fertilizes the ground? It's true. I've also read that during an electrical storm, the animals tend to become more, they tend to reproduce more. Energy leaves our sun at the rate of 5 billion tons of matter per second. 5 billion tons of matter per second. The sun gives off more energy in 1 second. Let me say it differently. More energy hits the earth from the sun in 1 second than mankind has produced ever in the history of men. All the electrical lights, all the nuclear energy, all the power plants, 1 second from the sun. The energy that hits the earth from the sun is 1/1,000,000,000 of the energy that's given off by the sun. If we had one pinhead of the material of the inner core of the sun, the inner portion of the sun, not all the way to the middle, and set it on the earth, everything within a circle of 180 miles would be dead. How powerful is that sun? If you've ever planted a seed, I don't imagine you thought much about it. But how does it know that the root should go down and the shoots should go up? How does it know that? How does it know what the temperature should be before it's supposed to germinate? I remember once I was squawking because my seeds weren't germinating, and Mrs. Heine said to me, "Well, Joe, they have to be the right temperature." Said, okay, why? Why do they have to do that? You know? The creation is a wonderful tool. When we consider the complexity of the creation, God does things in intimate and complex ways. Ecclesiastes, please, chapter 3. God's schedule is perfect. Everything that God does is perfect. And the creation helps us to see that. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1 simply says, to everything there's a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck what's planted. Things happen when God is ready, not necessarily when we're ready. The blooms won't come out when God's ready. When we have a trial, we want it over right away. God doesn't say that that's maybe what's best. Some years ago, I read that if you traveled the speed of light, you'd get across the universe in 28 billion with a B years. That's if you could travel the speed of light. Now, at that time, we believed there were 400 billion galaxies. I understand that the current count with the newest Hubble telescope is 2 trillion. That's about five times as many. I also understand that next year, 2018, a new Hubble's going up. I just got a hunch that we might find that we got some more galaxies out there. We were talking about snowflakes prior to services. Mr. Morrison was explaining some things I did not know. But I did know this. When I was a kid in kindergarten, I wore mittens, not gloves, you know, they were mittens. And I was told that there were no two snowflakes that was alike. So while the other kids were throwing snowballs around and things of this nature, I often would stand and look at my mittens. Now that might sound stupid, but if it was snowing and you're wearing mittens, the flakes don't melt when they hit your mittens. You can look at them. And I could see the shape of the various snowflakes. And they're beautiful. Now in southern Wisconsin, we have a number of ski hills. You know what ski hills are? You pay money and you can ride the lift and then you ski down the hill. Well, because sometimes snowstorms don't cooperate with their profits, these guys have machines that make snow. Guess what? The machines make blobs. They make blobs of snow. They don't make beautiful flakes. You can still ski on it, don't misunderstand me. But they're not those nice, beautiful snowflakes. DNA contains the information code of all life. All of science knows that information does not come from matter alone. All science will admit that information does not come from matter alone. Matter never gives nor ever has given rise to information. DNA is the densest form of information that we know. I've discussed DNA before, but I don't know if I mentioned this. If you had enough DNA to place on a pinhead, it would contain enough information to fill enough books to reach the moon over 500 times. Each of our cells has 46 DNA molecules, and our bodies have 30 to 40 trillion cells. It's mind-boggling. In this video, The God of Wonders, it's animated, of course, but it shows amino acids going up and down the DNA molecule. The DNA molecule can replicate itself, and these amino acids are looking for and making repairs on a minute-by-minute, second-by-second basis. The corrections are unbelievably complex, but they're also extremely efficient. It's why we can do what we can do. It's why our bodies can do this if you want to, you know, or anything. DNA and evolution just don't go together. They don't go together. Did you ever see a goose? When I was a kid, You'd see a V of geese maybe once a year. It was a big thrill. Well, down in Rockford, you can see geese any day you want to see them. I mean, I have been going to a doctor because I'm kind of old. And he's located on a place down near State Street in Mulford, and there's some ponds down there, and there are so many geese walking around down there that you have to be careful when you drive in that you don't run over them. When a goose comes flying in and he lands, he doesn't ever do this. You don't see that. You won't ever see it with any bird. Because God has given the birds a different breathing mechanism than we have, so that in fact they can fly and fly and fly and not get so out of breath that they just fall out of the sky. I was going to mention butterfly wings, but I've been told I already did that. So instead, I'm going to tell you about a documentary Don and I looked at about a few weeks back. It was really the story of a gentleman, a man who had studied the monarch butterfly. But the story of the butterfly itself I found fascinating. The saddest part of the video to me was in the beginning of the show, when the commentator stated that this man spent his life studying the butterfly because he wanted to find out how this butterfly had evolved. They begin down in Mexico. It's still cold up here, it's still winter. But in Mexico it's starting to get warm, end of February, so they begin flying up north. And they get to about Texas. There are about 300 of them, they estimate. About 20 years ago, I understand there were a billion. Now there's 300 million. I said 300. 300 billion. 300 million with an M of monarch butterflies. The female gets fertilized and lays approximately 300 eggs. Now, birds eat some and other bugs eat some. But out for each female butterfly, about three of these survive and turn into butterflies. It takes about 2 weeks where they're a caterpillar eating only milkweed. And then they're in the chrysalis stage another 2 weeks. And then they hatch. Mom and dad die. And the kids head north to the Midwest. And they go through this process again. Now that takes about another 2 months altogether. Okay, same process goes forth. Parents die, the next ones head north. And they get up maybe in the area of Toronto or Ontario and Northern America, Northern United States. And now the fourth generation is about to be born. And 6 months have gone by altogether, three generations. But up there now, it's getting cold, so they head south. I was once with my dad, this is years ago, in a boat, in the middle of Lake Monona, we were fishing up in Madison. And while we were fishing, a monarch butterfly came flying along, and I thought to myself, you poor dumb butterfly, what caused you to go across the lake? You're never going to make it, you're going to fall in. I was hoping he'd land on the boat and rest. Little did I know that these butterflies fly from Canada all the way down to Mexico, only the fourth generation. The first three die after 2 months. And he wanted to learn how these evolved. Let's look at Psalm 33. John 1 tells us that God the Creator, God the Father created everything by Jesus Christ. The power of the Godhead is evident. It's evident from creation. Psalm 33, look at verse 6. By the word of the Eternal, the heavens were made, all the hosts of them by the breath of his mouth. He gathers the water of the sea together as a heap. He lays up the deep in storehouses. Let the earth fear the Eternal. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. Now this is poetry. But you know, it's true. The meaning of it can't be ignored. God had a powerful part in the finest detail of all this. Jesus Christ upholds the universe by the power of his Spirit. If he didn't, we wouldn't be dust. There wouldn't be any dust. Psalm 147. We can look through telescopes, and the telescopes nowadays are very, very powerful. And we can see some stuff out there, but consider what we really don't see. Or, how much do we really see? And the answer is, not really very much. You know, when I was talking about seeds, I forgot to mention I bought a bag of potting soil this year. Every fall, I pluck heads off of my marigolds. I planted about 100 of them in there because, you know, that'll take maybe 30, 40, whatever I got, and I'll put them in the ground. 20 bloomed, 20 sprouted, 20. 20 of them sprouted out of about 100 planted. And I paid for this dirt. When finally, after 6 weeks, they got to be about an inch tall, I put them in the ground. Now they're with flowers on them, and they're blooming like crazy because of this dirt that we put them in. My mom called it dirt. She says, don't play in the dirt. Soil is amazing stuff. Psalm 147, verse 1. Praise the Eternal, for it's good to sing praises to our God. It's pleasant, and praise is beautiful. The Eternal builds up Jerusalem. He gathers together the outcasts of Israel. He heals the brokenhearted. He binds their wounds. He counts the number of stars, and he calls them all by name. Which is harder, to create a star or to call it by name and remember it? I have come to the conclusion myself that there is nothing in this creation that's an accident. I'm not saying there aren't mutations. I'm saying there's nothing that God created that was an accident. From the working ant that he talks about in Proverbs to the dog vomiting and eating it, he intended all that, to the sequoia trees that are so monstrous, and yet their roots underground have to hang on to each other so they don't fall down. We have a tray of seeds on our deck. It's attached to the decks, the railing, so that I can watch the birds, you know, they come down and eat the seeds. And a female cardinal will come down, and she'll start eating some seeds, and pretty soon, a male cardinal comes down, and he'll start eating a few seeds. It isn't long, every single time, but he will not pick up a seed, walk over to her, and hand her the seed, and she'll eat it, take it from him. I don't think that's an accident. None of this just happened. Brethren, if we ever have any doubts about the promises of God, and whether or not they're all true, all we have to do is start looking at the details of this creation. The scripture says that God did things with his own hand. Our duty is not to figure out the process, like the man who had to study the butterflies. I know of another individual who went to Africa and spent her life studying monkeys. Great, I'm not putting these people down. What I'm saying is that our opportunity, it isn't for us to worry about the process, but rather to recognize the majesty of God and glorify him the best that we can. Okay, question. If he did that with the universe, what's he doing with us? Let's look at Psalm 19. Psalm 19, please. We are the pinnacle of God's creation. Psalm 19, we'll look at verse 1. Sometimes when I read these psalms, the tunes of Mr. Dwight Armstrong's music, I hear it as I'm reading. Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tabernacle for the sun. The creation shows us the glory of God. Psalm number 8, please. Psalm number 8, and we'll look at verse 1. Psalm 8. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. You who have set your glory above the heavens. Psalm 8, verse 2. Out of the mouths of babes and nursing infants, you've ordained strength because of your enemies, that you may silence the enemy and the avenger. When I consider the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have ordained, what is man that you're mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? For you've made him a little lower than the angels, and you've crowned him with glory and honor. You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You put all things under his feet. If ever we have any doubts about anything that God has promised us, we only need to look at the creation. The closer we look, the more we see of God's handiwork. Let's look at Psalm 102, please. Psalm 102. In Philippians, Paul speaks about the peace that passes understanding. When you look at God's creation, the closer you look, the more peace you can actually see I say that because I've experienced it. Psalm 102, verse 25, "You of old, you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will endure. Yes, they will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak. You will change them, and they'll be changed. But you are the same, and your years have no end. The children of your servants will continue, and their descendants will be established before you." Humans are ultimately what God is doing. In Genesis, the second chapter, God says he breathed into Adam the breath of life. And a few verses later, he doesn't say the same thing for Eve, but you know that that's true. He took a rib from Adam, created Eve, and he breathed into her. The point I'm making is he breathed into both of them. It was a hands-on operation. Ephesians 2, please. We'll just look at verse 10. It was a hands-on operation, and that operation is not over with yet. Ephesians 2, verse 10. "We are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them." All of what God is doing in us is a hands-on operation, as with every bit of his creation. We are God's handiwork. He's creating perfection in us, and it's a hands-on operation. Not the human flesh, brethren. The masterpiece is when we are created again in Christ Jesus. When Christ is totally in us, let's look at Proverbs 8, please. Proverbs 8. And we'll start in verse 22 and read to verse 31. Now, the first person pronouns are used a lot here. It's not talking about an individual. It's talking about wisdom. Wisdom. Written by, except for Jesus Christ, the wisest human being that ever lived. In verse 22 of Proverbs 8, we read, "The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I've been established from everlasting, from the beginning, before there ever was an earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth or the fields or the primeval dust of the world." And the dust is not a simple thing. Potting soil that wasn't cheap. I guess it was. That's why I bought it. I thought it was on sale. Turned out to be not very good. He made the dust of the world. Verse 27, "When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep. When he established the clouds above. When he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit, so that the waters would not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always, always, rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the human race." If we ever are feeling down, we ever have any doubts, you know, my physics teacher was very, very wise. Ecclesiastes, please, the third chapter. God has given us the opportunity through his creation to see into his tremendous capabilities. And when he tells us that he's creating his masterpiece, he is. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 9. "What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of man are all to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts. Except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end." We don't know much. Deuteronomy 29 tells us there's a lot of secret stuff. I have to think we know very, very little. But the more that we see of what God has done, the more that we see of what God is doing, the more we can truly have our faith built, the more we can truly appreciate. God planned for his children prior to any of the creation. He hasn't given us much. You know, when I consider all that's out there, it's a good thing he hasn't. We've destroyed ourselves sooner. We don't know what he allows, what he does necessarily. There's some bad stuff. But we know this, that God is totally in control. And he is creating his masterpiece.